This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
All right, Bhante, over to you. Thanks.
I was wondering tonight if there were people who had never done meditation before or needed a lot of instruction.
Is there anyone who fits in that category? Is there anybody who would need extra instruction tonight?
All right. It looks like everyone has done meditation, and I can proceed. I was going to go over a little bit of the basic method of meditation, Ajahn Brahm's little booklet and his various steps. I brought my cheat sheet along because I can't memorize them all. But the first thing we're going to start with is sustained attention on the present moment. And I'm assuming that everyone has done that. Sustained attention on the present moment. The idea is to let go, is to have a mind that's inclined to abandoning. And what do we want to abandon? In particular, it's thinking about the present, the future, and the past. Silence and stillness and clarity is in, and inner bliss is our goal. So renunciation of the burdens of the past in particular and the future. The past, our memory is untrustworthy. You can see that by reports of automobile accidents and so on. I'm sure you know what I mean. different people remember things in different ways, and so on. So we can't trust our past, and our future is always uncertain, said the Buddha. Whatever we think will come to pass, it will always be different. So the other thing I wanted to point out is that difficult meditations are not necessarily a bad thing. It's like working at a shop or any place. You don't get your paycheck until the final day of the week or the final 2 weeks or month or whatever it is. So don't expect that every meditation is a golden one in your estimation. You have to do the work, and the real work is in those meditations in which you find unsatisfactory. Actually, no meditations are unsatisfactory. It's all just part of the doing of the work. The effort, making the effort you need to build up your merit, build up your good qualities. And so finally, it will come about that the good qualities manifest in a really good meditation. But then the very next meditation may not be so good. So you have to keep an even keel through, like, through the river and the rapids of meditation. And it's all a learning process. So that in particular is important. Now, once you've mastered mindfulness in the present moment awareness, are there any questions about that? Is everybody, everybody knows what I mean and so on. And so we want to drop the two bags of luggage. On the left hand is the past thoughts, and on the right hand are the future thoughts. We want to let those go and be free. Let go. Letting go is the most important thing we can achieve. The next step that Ajahn Brahm has is silent awareness of the present moment. And that silence, the accent is on silence. And so we want to drop the commentary, whatever commentary we have. He uses the simile of a tennis game in which we watch the tennis game, but we have maybe two commentaries, one of one side and one of the other. And so we want to drop these commentaries in our mind, commentary of whatever is going on. Well, usually all of us are doing that. And in the meditation, we want to stop the commentary, just let the commentary go, and enjoy the silence of the present moment. And soon we'll have bliss if we can master that. Soon we'll have the bliss of the silence. No commentary, no worry. Inner speech can cause, one thing it can cause is delusion and suffering. We talked about vipalasas the last time I was here, I believe, and the delusions come from perception, up through thinking, and then in consciousness. And thinking can produce the delusions that have been started by the perceptions that are a little off. So try to eliminate as well as you can the commentary. Stay in the present moment without thinking about what's going on. Thinking is usually pointless anyway. But if things happen, for instance, if there's a noise, let it go. Just, you can note it being there and just let it come and let it go. Whatever happens, if somebody walks through the room, just let them walk through. Don't try to prevent anything. Don't judge it. Just accept whatever is going on in the present moment. Let it be. And it will let you be. So the two preliminary stages for meditation, and we're aiming at meditation on the breath, the two preliminary stages are present moment awareness, and the second one is silent awareness in the present moment. Those are the two preparatory works, and Ajahn Brahm accents those and says that it's this preliminary work that is going to allow you to succeed with the breath meditation later. Now, in the meditation on the breath, we want to focus on the breathing experience without controlling the breath. Let the breath go as it will. Just let there be an in and an out breath without trying to do any kind of yogic control of the breathing. This is not yoga or pranayama. This is just watching the breath as it exists. Just our ordinary breath. And we want to have full sustained attention on the breath. This is the second part of the breath meditation. Once we have the breath, we want to watch every single part of it. It's like something interesting that he says in this little booklet is that we watch on the in-breath, we watch all the moments of the in-breath. All the little moments, it's of the in-breath, in-breath, in-breath. We don't have to repeat that, but give you an idea that we're watching each individual little moment of whichever stage we're in. The in-breath, and then the pause, 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 and then the out-breath, 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 and then the pause, and then the in-breath, and so on. And so we stay with each breath through the whole thing. It's sustained. Our attention doesn't say, well, I'm breathing, and then wander off to something else. We sustain it on each item of the breath that we can pick out. And we can notice as we're doing that that some things are longer or shorter than they were. Our breathing might be longer or shorter. Our pauses might be longer or shorter. We might be breathing deeper than we were. You can note that without talking about it. Just note it and let it go. And continue your full sustained attention on the breath. So our aim is ultimately the beautiful breath. I have talked a little bit before about nimittas. We get to a stage when our breathing is very successful, if you don't mind my using that term, and we're watching the breath, and everything becomes still. We become very still, and with the breath, there's no thought, and soon the breathing leaves us in a sense. Of course, we're still breathing, but we stop paying attention to it, and we come to a stage of piti sukha, which is rapture and joy. Piti is like rapture. Now, what is that? So there are different manifestations of rapture, and one is nimitta. Nimitta, some people have and some people don't. Some teachers talk about the nimitta quite a bit, like Ajahn Brahm, and some teachers. And I had one who never mentioned the nimitta at all, really. And there are other ways that piti can manifest. Piti is the first part. Sukha means happiness. Pitta can also manifest besides a light, some kind of light, such as the classic example is a full moon on a dark night, a very beautiful full moon, or an ordinary object like the handle of a spoon. And in the commentaries, it talks about a wooden peg, how prosaic. But the thing about these nimittas is that they're usually light. As they become stronger and stronger, they may start out dull, but as you focus on them, they become full of light and full of color, sometimes very intense color that you never see in the ordinary world. And you just focus on that light. And I wanted to say also that besides light or some object like that you see, you can also have a perception of in your body. And this is part of PT, for instance, a tingling in your body. And it's almost as if you were breathing electricity or some kind of energy. And the tingling goes through your whole body. And it's a wonderful feeling, but you may not see any light. You may have perceptions. These are perceptions. They're not the real thing, but you may have perceptions that do different things. One person may have tingling in their body and another may see a light or something is what I'm trying to say. When we get to that stage, we've reached a real great stage, because it's after that we can achieve jhana. Is everyone clear on what I mean by nimitta? The nimitta. But don't be disappointed if you don't see a nimitta right away. This is after quite a bit of meditation for long sustained periods in which you watch your breath and let the breathing go, and you stay with the breath for long, long periods. Now after that, this is what comes after that, piti sukha. Bliss sounds good. Bliss and happiness. And now if there are no questions, if there are questions about this, you can ask them now, or you can wait till the end of the session after the meditation. I'll go on and start the meditation.
Any questions at all? You're welcome, please. You can ask questions.
Questions about the beginning of the meditation? Anything about breath meditation? I did a very short version of Ajahn's little booklet, very short, just the main principles. So if there's anything that you're questioning, please sing out. And then otherwise, if you're happy to start the meditation, we have a 30-minute meditation coming, and it's by my clock, it's 7:23.
Yes, that's about right, Venerable. Last time you spoke about using words from the earth, for example, leaves.
I did.
Breathing in and breathing out, attaching some thought to when we're breathing in and breathing out. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
I'm not exactly sure what you mean. Are you sure it was me? It doesn't sound...
I've just been going back through my notes, and yes, I thought I saw it before. But anyway, could you give us an idea of, should we be attaching a thought to our in-breath and our out-breath?
Well, sometimes when we do metta, we certainly do. We say, may I be happy. We start out, may I be happy. May I be happy. There's another meditation that I ended the session with the last time I was here, Budo, which means enlightenment, and Budo, which Ajahn Mun used apparently in his meditations, Budo. It's in Budo. You can do that. That's another one. Ayakema also taught that in her, some of her meditations, Budo. I don't know, I think you said natural objects. I don't know what that would be exactly. I don't.
Choosing a mantra that was relevant to us personally. I chose leaves and breathing in with leaves and breathing out with earth.
Oh, I've never heard that before. Okay.
My apologies.
Oh, that's good. Well, maybe some other people would like to try that too. Generally speaking, we try to avoid any kind of talking while we meditate, except for certain meditations like metta, which we start out with, and then we drop the words after a certain point. Once we have a feeling, and I use the simile of the pump. You want me to talk about the pump, the old iron pump in the back of the farmer's yard, which we have to pump to get water out of? And I'm sorry? Yeah, this is, if we practice metta, and you can certainly practice metta if you wish instead of breathing meditation, but if we practice metta, we don't expect to have a feeling for metta right away. The feeling comes after we pump. We pump and pump and pump. And finally, you know how the water just starts flowing out of the nozzle. And then it will flow pretty regularly with just a little pump. Not too much, just a little bit once in a while. So that's what I would say about using words, say, with at least with metta. And what I'm talking about in metta, if you're not familiar with that, is we start out with may I be, you always start out with I. That may sound egotistical, but you can't really have metta for other people if you don't have metta for yourself. My teacher always told me that. So we start out with the self, and then we go on to a mentor, somebody we think greatly of, a teacher, or it could be somebody we don't know personally, or it could be Ajahn Brahm, for instance, as a mentor. And then we go on to a friend, a good friend, and then we go on. And these are some sustained, I mean, we don't just say it once, we do a couple of minutes or 5 minutes on this individual. And then we go on to, let's see, I think the next one is a person we don't really know well, but we know them and don't have any real feelings about them one way or the other. So we send metta to that person. We feel metta and send metta to that person. And after them is the person called the adversary, a person we don't like well or we have trouble with, or possibly somebody at work or our spouse or someone, hopefully not, but and so we do them. And then we've added one on, which is, may all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Does everybody get the idea of that? Or want any kind of amplification of metta? I hadn't actually intended to talk about it, but it seems seems appropriate.
It does seem appropriate. Tony, would you like to unmute yourself and ask a question or make a comment?
Thank you, Chris. Just a quick one. Bhante, is there a particular length of time that one should be aiming for in each in their meditation sessions?
Well,
I try and meditate twice a day. I don't always manage to do so, but my meditation sessions vary in length. Is there a particular objective in terms, or an I?
Well, let me say that straight away. I'll say that the advice given to people who are really serious about meditation is that you should use do 2 hours a day. Now that's way beyond some people's ability to do, and especially people who are beginning. So I would say you might start out with a half hour and see if you can do a half hour a day. And if you can do that, then extend it. And keep extending your amount. It's good to do them twice a day, morning and evening, if you can. Whatever you can do beyond a half hour, and if you can't do a half hour, then 15 minutes. Whatever you do is going to help you in the long run.
Yes.
Okay?
Thank you very much, Bhante.
All right. Excuse me, I have some trouble with the allergies. So, we can start the meditation now if you are all ready, unless there are other questions.
There seem to be no other questions, Bhante, so if you'd like to start, that would be wonderful.
All right, so I have 7:31, you may have 7:30. So we'll start our meditation now, and I haven't mentioned relaxations, but let your whole body be relaxed. And if you retain tension in your shoulders, raise up your shoulders like I'm doing and let them drop. And just let the tension go from the top of your head across your face, not leaving out your facial muscles. And your neck, and let the tension go from your shoulders and chest and out through your arms and hands. And let the tension go in your abdomen and down through your body, down your legs, and finally down, all the tension flowing out through the soles of your feet. And if you need to do it more than once, that's fine. Do it until you feel relaxed. And if during the meditation you feel tension building up somewhere, go ahead and stop your meditation and let the tension go. And then return to the meditation. All right? So be relaxed and meditate now. If you feel competent and ready to do the breath meditation and you've done it before, then you can start in with your breathing in and out. If not, start with present moment awareness. If you have a tendency to talk now and make comments because you haven't done a lot of meditation, just watch it for a while. And after a few minutes, I'll say something about switching over to silent present moment meditation. But if you've already gone beyond that and want to start out with breathing meditation, then go ahead. I won't coach you except for a little bit once in a while to keep everybody on the track, because the mind tends to wander. And starts thinking of other things. So meditate now. Keep your mind on the present moment. Avoid commentary. Now, if you feel ready, drop the commentary and proceed to meditate in the present moment without commentary, the silent present moment, and enjoy the bliss that comes up from the silence of the present moment. Be with that present moment. Now, if anyone is not doing breath meditation and they feel they're ready to go on to breath meditation, please do so. And watch your breath in and out. Noticing the different segments of the breath. here an in-breath, and then a pause, and then the out-breath, and then a pause, noticing the difference from one pause to the next, or one breath to the next, staying with the breath, ignoring all other thinking. Don't comment or evaluate the breath, just breathe in and out. If your mind has wandered off into thoughts, bring it back gently without criticizing, without evaluating, just back to wherever you are in your meditation, if it's the breath, or if it's the present moment meditation. Bring your mind gently back to your meditation. continue meditating on the breath, or whatever we picked as our object, the present moment, or metta. Keep your focus on that one thing. One object in our meditation. continue to meditate, focusing on your meditation object. If it's the breath, pay attention to the breath. If you've left the track, return to the breath. If you have attained a kind of bliss, it could be tingling in the body or something like that. Enjoy that tingling. And so in these last couple of minutes, I'll say the metta formula that we usually end on. May all beings be happy. 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 May all beings be well, happy and peaceful. May all beings be well, happy and peaceful. May we be well, happy and peaceful. May all of us here be well, happy and peaceful. May all of us be happy. May we all be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. And so now we'll slowly bring this meditation to an end, and we have the lights on, and I have our eyes closed. Be careful about opening your eyes and opening them slowly. Get used to the light. Now we can return to our meditation session with everybody. And I'll ask if there are any questions about meditation or any of the instructions that were unclear, or any questions that may have occurred to someone, to you, about any subject, but in particular meditation.
Gloria has a question from Bhante, if you'd like to take it. Gloria, would you like to unmute?
Yeah, I want to ask a question which is related to visualization in particular. Like the other day I did a meditation, like it's in Tibetan tradition, which is visualization meditation, and it gave me a really weird feeling. And because I'm a very like visualized person, I wonder if there is like any visualization meditation in like Theravada tradition, because I found that there is one which is like Golden Lotus meditation, and I just found this one, but I didn't find any other, so I wonder if there is any. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I can mention the kasinas. Have you heard of kasinas? Kasinas are used in orders of monks, some places, and there are round circles about this big, and sometimes you'll see them in pictures, if you haven't seen them in the in a monastery, on the wall, and there are certain colors, red, yellow, and so on, and white is one, and these are kasinas that you focus on in order to attain jhana. I can go farther if that interests you. If that interests you. The idea is that you look at the kasina and develop a memory of it. And then you have a first memory. I'm going to make this short. You have a first memory of this, say a red disc. And then you have in your mind, with your eyes closed, you have another memory that comes later. And this is very much different. It's very bright and red and very bright. And if you look at that over a period of time, you can attain jhana. That's the goal. That's the goal with those images. Otherwise, I don't remember any particular use of images in meditation, at least from where I've been taught. Does that help?
Yeah, if I want to try, should I just like find a red image from the internet and then I print it out and then I look at it?
Or yes.
Should I do it away?
Look up Kasina, K-A-S-I-N-A, I believe it's spelled. Kasina, or you can look it up in a book, a textbook, or one of Ajahn Brahm's books. Look up Kasina. And you can find out the colors and make your own, but if you want to try that. Or you might be able to find a photograph of them. There is a book, and I don't know the name of it, but it has a shot of a monastery wall, and it has the kasinas lined up on the wall, very beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay.
And Gloria, there's a message from someone in the chat for you about YouTube videos as well. We have a message in the chat for you, Bhante, to thank you for the very peaceful meditation. And Darlene has a question.
Hi, I have a question. When I'm following my breath and then I, after about 15 minutes, there's a very pleasant sensation. I might see flashes of light, darkness, and then I might feel a little dizziness. And I feel sometimes maybe a little fear comes in, maybe fear of the unknown. Could you speak to that?
Yes, that's something that you should all be aware of. And usually it's farther along in meditation. But things can happen, and you can see things that may scare you a little bit because they're the unknown. And you might, I was talking about seeing nimittas. Sometimes they scare people because they're very bright and they don't know what they are and they're not used to that sort of thing. That's an example. What you've been seeing is a personal thing with you. People have all sorts of personal reactions to meditation. I would say just overcome your fear. You know, in the various points of achieving enlightenment, the very last one, the 7 points, the last one is equanimity. And I was told by Ajahn Brahm, that's to counteract fear. So fear is not something that only a few people have. And it's very common, and it's even part of the 7 points of attaining enlightenment. Equanimity, upekkha. So I don't know if that helps you. I don't know exactly what the things that you described mean. They mean something to you, and they occurred to you. I haven't had them myself, although I've seen light, various lights and so on. But I'd encourage you to continue and not worry about it. Does that help?
Yeah, just sit with it. Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Actually, I would say I'd be overjoyed to have any kind of reaction like that in you, in your mind. These are things that are taking place in your mind, so I think that's wonderful that certain things can occur like that. Something's going on.
Thank you.
All right?
Thank you.
And if there are no other questions, I'll give a little bit of a talk. Unless there are questions. If there are, then they take first priority, certainly. Any questions about meditation other than otherwise?
If anybody has any questions, please welcome to unmute, or if you'd like to make a comment.
So, what I was going to... Is there something?
No, there's nothing else.
All right, then I'll continue. I have a little talk about aggregates. I don't know if you're familiar with the term aggregates. I hope so. Probably you are if you've been meditating for a while. In Pali, they're called khanda. And what they are is the five aggregates of clinging. And these are the ways that the Buddha divided up our material and mental experience of the whole world. This is what we are. He divided it up into these five classifications. Now, these classifications are never really separate in reality, and they're actually divided up into five for teaching purposes. They don't exist that way. You can't see them as separate items. But to give you an example of what I mean, the first one is, and these are called the aggregates, is the material group, rupa in Pali. The material group includes all of the four ancient elements. So that everything you see in your body is part of this material group, and everything that you see around you in the whole world that's rupa or material, this is all part of the material khanda or aggregate. All right, that's number one. And the other four all depend on the six senses because they're the mental groups. They're all the mental groups except for the first one, which is as far as our body is concerned, is our body. And the rest is our mental processes. So they are, the other four are feeling or sensations. The next one is perception. The next one is what we call will formations or our mental formations. Which would include, sometimes they're called volitional formations, which means the same as will formations. That includes our thinking, our speaking, our doing. In other words, kama. And this kama, I'm stopping here to elaborate. This kama is what goes with us through rebirth or into rebirth. This is the kama that we produce by our action, speech, and thought. And the last aggregate is consciousness itself. And consciousness has six different divisions. The mind is divided into six different kinds of mind, depending on the senses. The six senses. Each sense has a different kind of consciousness. So there are six consciousnesses, not just one. Now these are considered by us, why they're called clinging is because we cling, all of us, we cling to one of these five, and these five include everything, by the way. There's nothing outside of them, the Buddha said. There's nothing outside of them. There is no consciousness that's beyond them. And we consider these to be our personality. That's why we cling onto different ones at different times. We cling to them, and then we form our personality comes from these, and this is what we think is ourself, or atta, which we were taught does not really exist. Okay. And this is a little verse from the Buddha. It says, when all the constituent parts are there, the designation cart is used. These are the constituent parts of the cart, is what it means. Then we say that's a cart when the different parts are put together. When the parts are separate and lying around, we don't say it's a cart. We say there are pieces of a cart or whatever. Just so, where the five groups exist, the five aggregates, where they exist together, of living beings do we speak. In other words, each living being you see is made up of the five aggregates. But where one of them is missing, then we don't have a living being. We may have a body, but we don't have a living being. So I wanted to tell about how these were described by the Buddha in a very famous sutta. You have five similes. And the Buddha, I'll tell this story, was on the bank of the Ganges, and he saw a large lump of foam, which he didn't recognize at first, apparently, but as it floated downstream, he saw with a better view of it that it was made up of all the things that you might find in a lump of foam on the river. Of course, the bubbles make up the foam, and all the flotsam and jetsam and all the leaves and twigs and the dirt and everything that you might find on the river. It's basically the garbage of the river collected into this a floating piece of foam. And he thought, I will teach a sutta concerning the aggregates. And he said of this foam, he said, this foam is empty. This lump of foam has no real being. It's simply empty and made up of space and some water and so on. There is no real self. There is no real entity or essence to this foam. And the next one he told about had to do with feeling. And he said that in a big rainstorm, drops fall to the river or to a body of water, and from these drops, bubbles come up, and the bubbles last for a while and look like they are actually something and have some kind of essence. And of course, they break after a short time. And he said, just as these bubbles, our feelings have no real inner self, no essence to them, but they come very quickly. They come many, many at a time. Incalculable number of feelings occur in a snap of fingers. And that's the aggregate of feeling compared to a bubble, compared to bubbles. And the next one is perception. And he said, at the height of summer, on the hottest day, you may see in the sky, or you may see close to the ground, a mirage. You may see an oasis as a mirage, but a person with good discerning eyesight would finally see after examining it that it's not an oasis, it's not a real thing, there is no essence to it, it is simply a phenomenon that has no real inner being, there's nothing to this. And in the same way, our perceptions are hollow, empty, not a real self, subject to impermanence. That's perception. And the next one is our mental formations. And he said, in this simile, A woodsman goes into the forest looking for some good, hard sap, the inner wood of a tree that's hard, the pith. And he sees a good tree, which he thinks is good, but it's a banana tree, a plantain tree. And he chops it down and cuts off the crown, and then he starts unrolling it, and he finds that there's no real good wood in it at all. There's no outer wood or inner wood. It's all sheaves. Sheaves that you might take if you rolled up leaves, or if you took an onion and it's constructed like an onion is spelled. It goes on and on with an I in the middle. The I is us, is the self we think that exists there. So it goes on and on, and it goes on and because it's rolled up, and there are many examples, many different kinds of thought formations in our thinking. So the woodsman gets no wood from that. And then our last one is, in a way, the most interesting. He says that there is a magician. Imagine a magician at a crossroads, and this magician produces a phenomenon, and we think it's real. It looks real to us, but we know, because we've seen magicians before do sleight of hand or hap apparatus, and they're creating these phenomenon that are not real. They're only visual phenomenon that appear to us and then are gone. Because they're not real. What he says, what reality could there be in a magician's trick? And that's consciousness likened to a magician's trick. And think, I've thought many times, well, this magician is standing at a crossroads, like a cross or an X. Why is that? And, well, the obvious reason is that that's where he could get more customers to look at his magical tricks in a crossroads. But otherwise, maybe it has to do with the other four aggregates. He's the fifth. Consciousness is the fifth. Actually, there are six in consciousness, but we'll say that it's one for now, and the other ones are the other four aggregates together with his, and he in some way creates his phenomenon. What we see projected out, he creates it with the other four, aggregates. Possibly, it's a simile, and the wonderful thing about similes is that they're often not explained, and they're often not clear at the beginning. And sometimes it takes years and years, and similes are used in all ancient religions, and sometimes these similes are about things that we don't know about yet. And we won't know what they're about until we find out what they're about. Okay? You see what I mean? So similes are very fascinating, and I like this simile or these similes in particular. These are very famous similes. You've probably heard them before, but they're worth bearing in mind. They're in the Samyutta Nikaya, and they're in textbooks. The five aggregates, or the five khandhas of clinging, and. Anybody have questions about these, that or anything else? As the Buddha says, what about all of these? What kind of essence or being could there be in any of these? And the answer is no, there is no being. There is no permanence. There is no beauty, and there is no pleasure. And these are what we believe are ourselves and the world around us. And those are the aggregates. Very important to know. And actually, that's about all I have to say, unless somebody has a question they'd like to ask about anything, meditation, final thoughts about meditation.
Does anyone have any final thoughts they might like to offer or to ask the question? Well, I think this might be it, Bhante. Bhante, would you be happy to offer us a blessing before we finish?
A blessing. May you all be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to you. May all your higher aspirations come true. And may all of your friends and enemies be well, happy, and peaceful as well. And may all beings be happy.